You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
All right, Joe Fang going to join us here in just a moment or two. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. This hour driven by Wayscar Ford. Other people suggesting baby trout. Baby trout. So maybe that's an option. Others saying trout jerseys with baby bonnets or something along those lines. So some various options in place for Mike Trout's return to Seattle. Joe, good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing great. This has been awesome. I mean, I've been talking about this essentially nonstop since Sunday midday. Like, I love this stuff. Well, I live for it. It's entertaining, and it leads to great conversation about the unwritten rules and who's at fault and all of it. I think it's great.
I think it makes for fun conversation. I think, you know, what makes it less fun is when you end up on the short end of the stick, and I don't think there's any debating the Mariners will feel the consequences of the suspensions more than the Angels, certainly, when you talk about a closer and an interim manager compared to, you know, a handful of the team's most important position players, in addition to all the injuries. I think when you look back to what happened against Houston about a month ago or whatever, that the coolest part of that was Julio hit a bomb right after the scuffle. And, you know, so when you don't have that to, you know, circle back to, and you get blasted by the Orioles, it does take the wind out of the sails of, oh man, it is cool that this team has a backbone and sticks up for itself and has guys, you know, that play for each other. I, you know, that all means a lot, but at the end of the day, like, you don't want it to end up, you know, being a detriment to your team. And it's for me, it's hard to argue that, you know, it was an ultimate net positive for Seattle.
What should baseball have done?
Well, it's tough because suspensions are going to come, and I think most of Jesse Winker's suspension was because of the double bird to the crowd. I think that was the most significant part of it.
I thought so too, but it doesn't say that in the release from Major League Baseball. The release says, I thought the same thing as you. The release says simply, Jesse Winker has received a 7-game suspension for actions that caused the incident and for fighting. It doesn't mention the double bird.
Interesting. What drives me nuts too is just, this could have been so easily prevented. If Jesse Winker gets hit and the umpire does his job and says, hey, once, you're gone, out of here, this is all avoided. And there's maybe some chirping, and maybe Phil Nevin, you know, gets upset and comes out and wants to talk to the umpire and say, well, you know, you'll play the victim, whatever. But I can't for the life of me figure out why Jesse Winker gets dot when everyone knows it's coming. The whole Mariners dugout is telling him it's coming. And Jesse Winker's like looking at him like, dude, like, he's not even upset. He's not even looking at Wants like it's Wants' fault. He's just like, what are we doing here? And Scott's like, he's gone, right? And all he does is point him to first base and kind of usher him that way, as opposed to tossing Wants immediately. And I don't know how you give him the benefit of the doubt there, but to me, it's just so egregious how it was handled from an umpire standpoint. That, and then also from the Angels side, I get them being upset about the pitch at Trout's head. And I get saying, hey, unintentional or intentional, you don't come near his head, there will be repercussions. But it should have been over after they threw it, Julio. Like, that's it. You had your shot, you missed it, and now you got to move on. And the fact that it wasn't is also really frustrating, especially now when you consider that, A, they lost the game, then they get blasted by the Orioles, and the suspensions are far more significant for Seattle.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of that. It was Bush League to go after him a second time. The strange thing about the umpiring is generally we're critical of the umpires because they want to be too in control, that they are too quick to make judgments. And in this case, it seemed like the guy froze, and rather than, you know, declaring, you're out of here, like they always do in those situations, he paused and like was unsure of himself. And that allowed everything to go down.
Yeah, I agree. And the issues, the warnings were issued. They already had the meeting in the first inning. They had already talked about this. I can't wrap my head around how that wasn't. You're right. He just froze. And I don't know why. And I wish we got to hear more from umpires after the game. And I think at least NFL reporters are, you know, you have to be made available to a pool reporter every game should something go down. You know, the lack of accountability for umpires is really infuriating. And, you know, this situation where, again, especially how it ultimately turned out, the steps leading up to it were also avoidable. And, you know, the Mariners end up losing their top. And, you know, how Julio gets two games, you know, it's frustrating. It's so, you know, hopefully, you know, you look at the appeals that will end up benefiting Seattle. Maybe Julio's goes from 2-1, and you have some of that. But, you know, it's like, gosh, I wish Scott Service got five games. If you take away J.P. Crawford's and Julio's, but I know it doesn't work like that. And, yeah, so I think it was really kind of fun in the moment of like, yeah, this team is easy to root for. And there's a lot of players on it that are easy to root for. But as the, you know, things kind of play themselves out, the ripple effects were not super positive.
Do you think they should have done anything differently?
Suspension wise?
No. Do you think the Mariners should have done something different? Is there any other way they should have handled it?
You know, it's super easy to say days after the fact, but I understand, you know, them wanting to stand up for themselves. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. And I think at some point you have to, you know, say, okay, you're going to stick up for your guy clearly, but enough's enough. You know, we're going to stick up for us as well. And, you know, look, the immediate reaction of Jesse Winker isn't, I'm seeing red, I'm going to start a fight. But when the whole Angels dugout is chirping at him, he says, all right, fine, I guess this is how this is going to be. No, I really don't have an issue. I don't really find a ton of fault. And I don't honestly find a ton of fault with the Angels up until the point of dotting Winker. If they throw behind Julio, okay, we disagree with it. They didn't like Mariners throwing it at Trout. Mariners didn't like them throwing Julio, but again, it should have been done. And there's just the ways this could have been prevented, I think, is just like, and that's what the Mariners' instant reaction was. Like, what are we doing? Let's deal with this. And they didn't. There was a good 5 to 10 seconds where they could have done that, and they failed to.
I wonder if the way to handle it for the future, and it's weak because it kind of goes against a lot of it, but you have your pushing and shoving, you just don't throw punches. Because there are a lot of people pushing and shoving and all of that, but the only ones who got suspended, other than Julio, which nobody seems to be able to make heads or tails of, were the two guys that were very clearly throwing punches on camera.
Yeah, and, you know, Crawford flying in, jumping and throwing some Hail Marys is ill-advised. But again, I would rather see that than Jesse Winker goes in and everyone just kind of waltzes over
right
to his aid. I mean, the entire dugout was right behind them. So again, hindsight being what it is, yeah, you should never throw a punch in a game. And you, at that point, you get what's coming to you suspension-wise. But I also, yeah, it would have been much more discouraging if Winker walks over to the dugout and says, what are we, you know, okay, fine, here we go. What do you guys want to say? And he's all by himself. So, again, I'm not finding a ton of fault with the Mariners here. It's not like I'm looking at this and you know, kind of scolding them for how they handled it. It's just ultimately a bummer when you look at they're the only team that got hit, and they also are feeling the biggest penalty from it. So that's a shame. Again, given that the Angels should have stopped it sooner and the umpires should have handled the business and done their jobs better as
well. Our last thing for you. Are you more surprised that the robot microchip inside Mike Trout was programmed for him to say something about it after the game on Saturday? Or are you not surprised because the perhaps chemically enhanced portion of Mike Trout got so angry after the game on Saturday?
Well, we do know as a fantasy football commissioner, he likes to be passive aggressive and stir the pot. So I think we know that's part of his DNA now. And so, yeah, there's no denying that Mike Trout played a huge role in this. And he could have said, God, I know it wasn't intentional, but you never want your tower buzz. Like, that's not a fun feeling as a hitter. And, you know, so, and you maybe you would have loved Eric Swanson to be more emphatic about, I didn't mean to. I'm trying to pitch the guy up and in. I didn't have any control of my fastball. But, you know, he sort of played it down the middle of the road as well, as opposed to, like, you know, trying to be outwardly apologetic to, you know, the best player in the game. But, yeah, Mike Trout absolutely played a role. And the whole Justin Upton layer of this that Jen Mueller reported, and I know he was on with Bob and Wyman on Monday, you know, that, like, I can't for the life of me understand, like, I'm supposed to accept their apology and understand that it's unintentional, but yet they can't, you know, respect the same thing.
Again, I kind of understand that. Another, you're Justin Upton, he's Mike Trout. Like, I do sort of understand that. Different rules.
Sure.
Like, sure. Sorry, Justin Upton doesn't play by the same rules as Mike Trout. He's Mike Trout. He's one of the best in the game, and he gets protected differently than a guy who's on his way out of the league.
Well, that's different. I think that the protecting him is fine. The, like, not being able to even entertain the thought that it was unintentional is what I'm saying.
No, I agree.
Like I said, whether I understand the whole Angels organization and every Angels fan being upset and saying, hey, unintentional or not, there's going to be consequences, and that was the Julio pitch. Okay, the message was sent, message was received, and it was done after that. And even Julio, like, kind of looked around, was like, all right, okay, you know what I mean? Like, he handled it tremendously, and that's where it should have ended. So I'm not even, I have no issue, regardless of what happened with Swanson and what his intentions were, you can't do that. And that's what the Angels' stance is. Totally get it. But
Joe,
you get one shot.
Good stuff. Thank you. And thank you for setting me straight on my idiocy on Twitter the other day. I appreciate it. I've already taken an L here this morning for not knowing that that was John Boy. But I'm getting old, and these are the things that happen. And it'll happen to you, too. So thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. I appreciate you, man. I'll talk to you next
time. There you go. There's Joe Fan. You can find him on Twitter, and it is well worth your time at @Joe_Fan. Find his podcast, find his YouTube channel, etc. Joe does a great job. All right, coming up next, we'll go through everything you need to know, the details on the suspension, including the most bizarre suspension of the whole thing. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710SeattleSports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should be particularly surprised that Major League Baseball got it all wrong when it came to the suspensions. Handed down from Sunday's brawl in Anaheim, of course, interim manager Phil Nevin did get 10 games for ordering an intentional hit by pitch after warnings have been issued, but that in and of itself should be telling. It was intentional. The Angels started the whole thing and kind of forced the Mariners into a position of how to respond. Well, for their trouble, the Mariners ended up with 3 suspensions. Jesse Winker gets 7. J.P. Crawford, 5, and Julio Rodriguez, for whatever reason, nobody can figure it out, ends up getting 2 games. I think the whole thing is, quite frankly, fairly ridiculous, and Jesse Winker agrees.
You know, it's an unfortunate part. You know, it's an unfortunate part because it could all have been stopped with a simple ejection and people just not talking. You know, I said that you weren't here, but there's a man with a cast on and a manager talking. That's why this started. If they're not talking, none of that happens. But they decide to run their mouth, and I didn't like that. And that, it's that simple. There's nothing else left to say about that. They're going to suspend me. They're going to suspend Crawford, and that's the MLB's decision. Whatever.
Whatever is a great part to it. He also, I think when he was alluding to speaking before the microphones came over, had also said that it could have been avoided if the umpires had simply thrown the guy out of the game. And if that had happened right away, he would have trotted down to first base and taken his base. So, yeah, it's fairly ridiculous. On the Angels side, beyond Nevin, pitching coach gets 5, Wants gets 3, Tapera 3, Iglesias 2, bench coach 2, catching coach 1, and the interpreter gets 2 games, which I just find entertaining because I'm curious how they're going to live without him. It is ridiculous. The league admits the Angels started it. They premeditated it. But for whatever reason, the Mariners are going to have to bear the brunt of the whole thing. Here's Scott Servais.
I'm not going to get involved in the appeal process. We have to just play it out. You know, it doesn't matter what I think. It's up to commissioner's office and you know, what they're going to go there. We were in a tough spot yesterday, and you know, we're going to pay for it by losing some of our better players here for a significant amount of time.
Yeah, maybe some regret on Scott's part. For the record, he brings up appeals. All 3 Mariners have appealed, and they can stagger their suspensions. They've been told that by Major League Baseball. So that will help, at least, in the loss column.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, you always hear momentum's the next day starting pitcher. Unfortunately, the Mariners did not. We're not on the right side of that yesterday. Day after all the excitement in Anaheim, George Kirby simply did not have it in the opening game of the homestand against Baltimore.
We haven't had that game in quite some time. Our starting pitching has been the anchor for us. You know, probably over the last month or so. The guys have been so darn consistent. You know, tonight, that was the roughest outing for George. All that, you know, all the trouble really came with 2 outs. in a number of those innings, and he just struggled to put guys away tonight.
Yeah, ended up giving up 7 runs, 4 innings, 2 sets of back-to-back home runs in the 3rd and 4th. He just was not very good. It broke the Mariners' long streak of 24 games in which their starting pitcher had given up no more than 3 runs. And then some suggestion, both Jason Churchill and Joe Doyle, both friends of the show, both suggested online yesterday that maybe Kirby was tipping his pitches. I hope so. That's always good to hear, right?
Easy explanation.
Why was he so bad? He was tipping his pitches. They knew it was coming. Great. Fix that, and you just move on. Regardless, after winning 4 straight, Mariners have now lost 2 in a row. They will take on the Orioles again tonight, game 2 of the series. Robbie Ray and Dean Kramer.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, hearing today for Deshaun Watson's discipline, the NFL recommending he serve an indefinite suspension of no less than 1 year. The case will be decided by disciplinary officer Sue Robinson. She's a former federal judge, paid jointly by both the league and the Players Association. And quite frankly, I don't think it's enough. Major League Baseball, for all of its flaws, suspended Trevor Bauer for 2 years after the accusations against him, and I was hoping the NFL would follow suit. They have not. Go figure. In other NFL legal issues, the House Oversight Committee says Dan Snyder has so far refused his subpoena, which is apparently something you can do when you're a billionaire. It's rare, but apparently not unprecedented. He will eventually have to comply, or he will be held in contempt, which, I don't know, maybe that just means he has to stay in a different yacht. I'm not sure what that means. All right, there you go. It's everything you need to know. We do that 1:15 every hour here on the Mike Salk Show.
I just saw, and this was happening on the Seahawks subreddit last couple days, because somebody found what they think was a leak of Baker becoming a Seahawk, and it was the jersey.
I saw that this morning when I woke up. Is there any? So, yeah, do you think there's any truth to that?
Got a little update on that. We can talk about it next.
Oh, good. All right. So I've got a whole potpourri of things I want to talk about next. So let's do this. Baker's jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Some bad news. Good news, bad news at the same time regarding the Kraken. The Mariners made a trade for a familiar name, but we should discuss whether or not it's a good thing for the team. And I get a couple other things as well. So let's do all of that next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710SeattleSports.com.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
God, I want a Pop-Tart so badly.
Isn't the Pop-Tart day?
I just want to. I mean, yesterday was. I told you right.
Yeah, you knew right away.
I was like, I knew right from the beginning it was never going to be avoided yesterday. But I just, you know, this time I want a Pop-Tart, and it's all we've really got for breakfast around here.
Your so. Pop-Tarts are my hot wings. I think that's what I've learned.
It's no, like, I have a hot wing problem too.
Every day I talk myself out of going and getting wings. It's a debilitating problem.
All right. Well, I got a whole hodgepodge of potpourri things to get to here in the next 20 minutes or so. I want to first, Justin, say thank you for the little gift you gave me here. I'm holding it up for anybody to see if you're watching on the stream. This is from Baron Banana Ketchup.
Yeah, you were talking about ketchup popsicles the other day, and people started sending messages. Apparently, it's a popular thing. And it's comes from the Philippines, is what I learned.
Really? Yeah. All right. Well, so I will try the banana. What do you think you put banana ketchup on? Fries?
I don't know.
I mean, is it sweet? Is it a savory thing? Does it go on dessert?
I had never heard of it until the text.
You
so
put it
it's
on
not
ice
like
cream?
I have any information that I can really base this off of.
All right. Well, maybe in the next break we'll pour some into like a plate or something, and we can just like test
at least
like,
try
taste
it.
Test it.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, ketchup by itself is disgusting. So, you know, it goes on something or else it's
yes.
nasty.
Well, according to the website where I got it, it says, while it might sound odd, Filipino banana ketchup is a delicious condiment that is sweet and tangy and remarkably similar to tomato ketchup.
I mean, I think it sounds good. I'm certainly up for the opportunity, but I'm a little curious how it goes. All right, let me run through some of these things. We've been talking a lot of baseball here, so I will move away from baseball for a minute, and then we'll come back to it because I want to talk about Carlos Santana, who was acquired yesterday from Kansas City. So did you see the Kraken news yesterday?
I saw it last night.
All right.
And so, was a little confused. I mean, I think it's a good thing, right?
Well, it depends from whose perspective you are speaking. So the Kraken have announced that next year, and this is from Emerald City Hockey I'm reading here on Twitter, the Kraken have announced that they'll have $20 and $40 single-game tickets available next season. According to the team, 1/3 of single-game inventory will be priced at $40 or less.
Hmm.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And Emerald City Hockey writes, awesome move to help more fans be able to see the Kraken in person and grow the game. Yes, agreed. And from the fan perspective, the fact that tickets are going to be available for as little as $20 is spectacular, especially given how hard it was to get into the games last year. However,
there's a but coming here.
From the team perspective, we talked a little bit about this, right? How much of the you know, Seattle is a event town. It's a FOMO town. I know people say it's a bandwagon town. I disagree. All towns are in some way bandwagon towns.
Naturally.
Winning begets people wanting to come see things. But I think what Seattle is, Atlanta's a bandwagon town. They don't care about anybody until they're winning. Seattle is an event town. It's a FOMO town. When everyone has decided to go somewhere, everyone wants to be a part of it and wants to be at the big thing. And it doesn't matter whether that's a concert or an event or a sporting team, whatever it is, that's where people want to be.
Okay.
Right?
I would argue that's largely due to weather.
That may very well also be the case, too. Yes. Like, fair point.
You can't go outside half the year and there's something to the concert. Yeah, let's go.
Fair point. Anyway, everyone kind of got in on the whole, oh my God, we've got to get Kraken tickets. And,
yeah,
you know, you set the record and the season tickets sold and all of that. And then they started the season and they weren't very good, unfortunately. And Seattleites, for the most part, don't know a lot about hockey. It's not in the bloodstream here the way it is in some other towns. It's new. There was some expectation, maybe unfairly, that they were going to be as good as Vegas was when they first got their team. And obviously that was not the case. They underperformed. Dave Hakstol may be a good coach, but I think his system does not lend itself to particularly exciting hockey. And especially they struggled on the power play. You kind of chalk it all up. And all of a sudden we saw the ratings plummet. We talked about that over the course of the season. Some of it is not their fault, right? Obviously, you know, the COVID issues and then the injuries that came with it. I mean, that was unexpected. But from everything I've been told, they were expecting to have significantly higher ratings than they did. And after the COVID time off, they really crashed in the second half of the year. And I don't know whether enough people even know that they're en route. I mean, they're not really advertising that anywhere. When you go to the building and are there, I don't see a lot of advertisement for, hey, when you leave, go watch the game en route. So anyway, that I wonder if it's created an issue where either A, season ticket holders are not keeping their tickets
renewing
into year two because they spent a lot of money on it and maybe they thought they were going to make money off the tickets or whatever. And I wonder if they were having trouble selling individual tickets for the second season, which is why you end up with a drop in price. Because I've never seen a team that was selling out their building every night decide to lower prices.
Gotcha. So this is the whiff of desperation, sort of?
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I don't want to criticize. I don't want to say that. But certainly you've got to at least think that maybe the interest level in year two is not as great as they had hoped it would be after year one.
I mean, it's an inaugural season. Don't you expect that? They're not going to open the season with $20 or the franchise series, new arena, everything with $20, $40 tickets.
Maybe.
So that is, I hope this is just a response to the fan survey, whatever they do to the season ticket holders who are like, hey, what would get you to come here or come back or renew or whatever? And I don't know if the ticket season ticket holders, because the group that I'm in on season tickets, we haven't had a conversation about that yet, like how much they are, if it's changed, and or if we're renewing them in general. I don't know. But that's what I'm hoping it was. It was just based off pure the analytics, the data that they got back from the service.
Yeah. I got a texter here who says they're lowering ticket prices because people quickly got tired of dealing with zero parking and traffic at every game. It should have been built in Soto. Failed location is failing again. I flatly disagree with that.
Yeah,
I
never had a problem with that.
I have not heard from one person who went to a game and was troubled by any of those things. I really haven't. And I'm not just, you know, this is not a confirmation bias. I know almost everyone I know at some point went to games this year. I did not hear from a single person who had an issue with traffic, mostly because there's no traffic heading to that game. Certainly no more than there is in Soto. And I didn't hear from anybody who was complaining about the parking issues or anything like that.
Yeah.
People complained about the product, the fact that they lost, that they were there watching a team that lost almost, what, 2/3 of the games or whatever it was. I think that had a factor. I didn't hear anybody say anything about parking, or I didn't hear one negative thing about the arena literally all year.
And I know that they did a really good job of people who live, you know, near the city for like, hey, transit's free with your ticket. So go to any one of the parking rides, jump on the light rail, and you're going to be here for free with it.
Right.
And buses the same way.
Yeah, so I didn't hear that, but I understand. People are going to get mad, and they want to kind of prove their point, but I don't think it had anything to do with that. So, you know, I'll be curious to see where this goes. I think it's probably going to be a few years before the Kraken are competitive. I mean, like, Stanley Cup competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they may be good, but I think it's going to be a while before it is Stanley Cup competitive.
I think everybody would agree with that. And after watching the Stanley Cup, I was like, ooh, these are different teams than the team I watched.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, just a completely different kind of thing. So anyway, that was sort of story one I wanted to go over. In the meantime, great news. If you couldn't go last year because you were priced out or you wanted to take your kids or this, that, and the other, awesome. I mean, $20 to $40 tickets from a fan perspective is A-plus great.
For sure.
Awesome news.
Especially for families. Yeah, you're right.
So that's great.
I agree. I think it's good. Did you see this Baker Mayfield story then about the jersey and the team store and how the Seahawks maybe have accidentally leaked?
So let's address this. So take me through this.
So there was an image on just the Seahawks team store of a jersey with a number 6 that you look. It said in the text that it was a Baker Mayfield jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really looked into it, there was still Diggs attached to it because that's his jersey.
Because he was wearing number 6 last year.
So someone changed the information on the page for ordering the Quandre Diggs jersey to make it look like a Mayfield jersey.
So it was a fraud.
Yes. So it appears
fraudulent
to have been,
story.
According to Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, it apparently is definitely fake. So for anybody who was convinced by that, unfortunately, you're wrong.
You had to go to Snopes for that? Did you have to like go through and try to figure all that out?
I mean, no. This also, though, you would also probably agree, this doesn't mean he won't be a Seahawk either, right? So
yeah, this is no news, right?
Yeah,
essentially, if the other one was good news and bad news, this one is no news.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically, this will qualify as no news.
I just want to know how that kind of thing happens. Like, what employee did that? Who gets into the code there and changes just that thing and nothing else?
I mean, hackers. I mean, who the heck
I know,
knows?
But why would you change something else?
Because people are crazy. Why does somebody create a bread account on Twitter to try to fool people into thinking the Seahawks have made deals?
True, that's fine.
I don't know why people do what they do. People are crazy.
Yep. Well, just a heads up for anybody I saw convinced this morning.
I did see the story. I will admit I am not somebody who, I don't know if you would admit this, but I am not somebody who is easily convinced by leaks from the, clothing departments. That's not the type of thing that gets me. Josina Anderson having a report and other people sort of hearing the rumor mill, et cetera, that has a little bit more of an effect on me.
Hearing Brock say it a little bit more today, too, that felt a bit more convincing.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
It just, again, I've always felt this way, and I'll keep saying it. Does it make sense to you that Pete Carroll, at his age, with his philosophy, is going to be content going into this season with Drew Lock and Geno Smith?
That doesn't make sense to me, no.
I don't know what else we have to say.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at that point, whether it's Baker or Jimmy or whoever ends up being out there, you would think is a more likely candidate than either of the two guys who are currently in your quarterback room. I feel bad. I feel like I'm kind of repeating myself on this subject, and it's a huge subject because until it happens, you're looking at a quarterback room that is. You know, subpar. We went through the Chris Sims list of quarterbacks, remember, a few weeks ago, and neither of your quarterbacks were in the top 32. That's an issue.
Not a good sign.
You got two guys on your list, none of whom are viewed as a starting quarterback in the NFL. That means there are backups on other teams that are better than what you've got for your starter.
Could there be a weird dark horse number 3 if Jimmy and Baker were door 1 and 2? Hmm. Is Minshew still in that conversation? Could you make a play for your guy from Baltimore? Anything like that?
That would be exciting. I don't think so. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I sure would think anything like that would have happened before the draft and not after it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, the reason Garoppolo and Baker are possibilities is because nobody went after them and they may end up getting cut because the market shriveled up, which is what Brock was saying. With those other guys, whether it's Tyler Huntley or Gardner Minshew, I would think that they would have been dealt before the draft, right? Taylor Heinicke, I don't think he's going to get traded. because, you know, Carson Wentz is an injury risk he's not very good anyway. So I don't think Washington makes a deal. You think Philadelphia feels confident 100% in Jalen Hurts enough so that they aren't going to deal Baker Mayfield? I don't think so. Not Baker Mayfield. You just said it. From Washington.
Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew. Thank you. I don't think they, I can't imagine feeling so confident in Jalen Hurts that I would let Minshew get away right now. So I don't see it.
And where was it that Foles just signed? I'm forgetting this. It just happened. Well, just happened in football terms in the summer. I mean,
New Orleans. I don't remember somewhere. But so, you know, you're sort of running
Colts.
Okay, there you go. Very similar to New Orleans, except zero.
Yeah, not at all.
I don't know what direction all of that ends up going. Justin, some good questions, but it's I don't see a third party. To me, it's doors number one or two. Either Baker or Jimmy, and that seems to make the most sense. And as I've said before, my gut tells me Baker's more likely, even if I might prefer Jimmy, because I think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to go to Cleveland. Because the Niners aren't going to trade him here. He'd have to get cut. And I think once Baker is out of Cleveland, that the Browns trade for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Interesting. The squeaky clean-looking quarterback compared to what they've had.
I would do that.
Yeah.
Quite the comp compared to what you're going to
have. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Very interesting.
Jeez. All right. I said this was some potpourri, and I'm kind of bouncing around some different stories. So let me come back to baseball. Not just the suspensions. We've obviously talked a lot about them today. But the Mariners did make a trade yesterday, and they deal for 36-year-old Carlos Santana. Now, used to be a big name. He's not anymore, not just because of the guitarist. But he used to be a big name, came up with Cleveland mostly as a catcher and a DH. He was a really good hitting catcher when he came up in 2010, 2011, his rookie year, he had an OPS of 868, then 808. I mean, like, he was really hitting the cover off the ball. He has 795 or 85, 832, 792, 752, 865, 818 in 2017. Started to go south in 2019. 2018, 766. Another good year at 911. And then all of a sudden, 2020, it drops below 700. Last year, 660. This year, 690. He's not been the same player for the last 3 years, pretty much once he hit 34.
Yeah, he started bouncing. Phillies, Indians, Royals.
Yeah. And he's been in Kansas City here the last couple of years. Has not, you know, he's hitting 216. He's got more strikeouts than walks. I mean, unfortunately, you know, his game is not what it once was, but he did have 19 home runs last year. He's hit as many as 34 in a season. I mean, he's got a little bit of pop.
Yeah, Shannon Dreher pointed out he has had a really good June.
Right. He's hit well over the last couple of weeks after two really miserable years in Kansas City.
But my question for you is, you said your four things the Mariners need. One was a veteran presence in the clubhouse who's been there, who's experienced playoffs, all of those things.
And one other thing.
Who didn't have a fork in his back.
Right.
Which, to your definition, Justin Upton may have been that.
Justin Upton, I think, might unfortunately have that fork in his back. Seems like a really good guy.
Yeah.
No, like listening to him talk, like, but unfortunately he just hasn't hit since showing up.
So where is Carlos in this conversation?
Well, I don't know. But I had a friend in Kansas City, my friend Carrington Harrison, who does afternoons in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And I texted him yesterday and said, hey, does Carlos Santana have anything left? And he wrote back in capital letters, no. Oh. So I don't know whether he does or not. He's like, yeah, he had a good month, and thank God they finally got something for him. He said, I started my show today by saying the Royals' patience finally paid off because they got something back for Carlos Santana.
Oh, that's not,
so,
that's not,
you know, good. I don't think they were too sad to lose him. But you don't need him to be good for the rest of the year. You need him to be good for the next month until you end up getting Ty France back, at least.
Yeah.
And then anything else you get beyond that is gravy.
Well, my first thought was, this says more about Ty France than I think we were hoping for.
I think so, too. And I know Scott was sort of positive yesterday in saying that maybe France wouldn't miss that much time. I got to tell you, man, I'm a little worried. And I don't mean he's going to miss the rest of the year or anything like that. But today is June 28th. What's the All-Star game?
I thought it was the week earlier, but it's later. It is the week of.
I thought it was the week of the 13th. Is it not?
No, it's like the 18th.
The week of the 18th.
Yeah.
Okay. Of July. Yeah. July. Sorry about that. I was looking at June. Yes, the week of the 18th. You may not see him back until after the All-Star break.
Oh man.
So when you think about that, that would be, it's not quite a month, but it's close.
They get back to games the 21st, is that right?
Something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's 3-4 weeks.
All right. That's Don't love that you're right. I don't.
Know that I'm right. I said it would worry me that that would be the case, based on that action and sort of, you know, et cetera.
Well, could you theoretically then have Ty, Haniger, and Lewis all coming back within that same couple weeks span?
I think you may see Lewis before then. I mean, the fact that he was out running around yesterday, right? I mean, he doesn't have any muscle issues or anything like that. Once he's feeling well, he can go out and play, take a rehab start or two, and off you go. You could have him back within the week, honestly. And I'm not saying you will, but if his symptoms have cleared to that point, I would think it shouldn't take that long for him, once he's ready, to come back.
And where's Haniger in that conversation?
I think it's going to be a while. Again, you're dealing with trying to get over a high ankle sprain.
Yeah.
Right? Once you're coming back, you're progressively getting better. Unfortunately, it's just a different kind of an injury.
Okay, then Kelnick.
You want to bring him back?
The next play for that.
You want to bring Jared back?
I mean, we're going to have a lot of guys out in suspensions here soon. I know they're not served congruently, but...
Well, you can certainly do it for that purpose. Unfortunately, you don't get to add a roster spot when somebody is out. So it's not like, okay, Julio's out for two games, call up Kelnick to take his place. You can't do that.
Got it.
When Julio's out, your roster drops from 26 to 25. When Crawford's out, your roster drops from 26 to 25. So you don't get the opportunity to just call up a Jared Kelnick and let him take his place, unfortunately, because that might be a good spot. Let Kelnick come up, say, hey, look, you're going back down in a week, but we need you here for the week. Come up, see what you can do, et cetera. But that's not an option with the suspension. So things get a little complicated, right?
Yeah.
Well,
seeing like Padlow and Drew Ellis. That's where you're like, is that really what we want right now? I understand the long term, that is in the bigger picture more important. It's still hard to swallow.
It's a good question that we can certainly ask Jeff Passan tomorrow at 7:30, and we can ask Jerry about that at 8:30 on Thursday as well, because I think it's a really good question. At what point, when you're starting and playing Drew Ellis, mm-hmm. do you say, all right, enough's enough, let's get Kelnick back up here? If both guys are going to hit 200, I'd rather have it be Kelnick with the power and everything else. There's a fair question. But where does Kelnick play right now? Let's say you bring up Kelnick. Where's he going to play? You're going to put him in right field over Trammell, who's hit the ball pretty well? I'm not going to do that. You're going to put him in center field over Julio? You're going to put him in left field over Winker? You could DH him. Right? Or one of those guys.
Or, yeah, just platoon DH with Winker.
Yeah, because it's not like you're getting anything, but you just acquired Carlos Santana. So, yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation. I'm glad you brought it up. Kelnick is still sort of lurking out there, right? Of like, hey, what do you do with this guy? Here's my hope. That the primary focus with Jared Kelnick is his own development. You don't bring him back full-time until he's ready to come back. But there's a caveat to that. And that is, what if it's on a limited time basis? What if, you know, while he's out or one of these guys is out, well, Winker's going to be out for 7 games and Julio's going to be out for, let's say, 2. So for 9 games, for a little over a week, you are going to need another outfielder, even if, you know, you don't get an extra roster spot. So let's say Winker goes out for 7 and Julio goes out for 2 and they serve them back to back. Do you send down an infielder like Drew Ellis during that time and call up Kelnick so that you have another outfielder? Yeah, I think I might. Your other option is Haggerty, playing, you know, Dylan Moore out there, et cetera. At some point, yeah, I might bring the kid up and say, all right, it's just 11 games. You're not going to win a spot back here. But we need you. Yeah, I think I probably do that.
Yeah.
I think that's probably exactly what I do.
And his defense is really good. It'd be different if he was questionable there, and that's what you need.
That's right. So I do think that could be a possibility. And again, you manage his expectations. You take all the pressure off of him. You tell him, if you hit 600, you can't stay. We're not giving you that option right now. We're just giving you a chance because we need you for these 11 games or 9 games or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Yeah, I could be sold on that pretty quick. I think I could. But that would be my only caveat.
Are you going to get to see him when he plays in Tacoma one of these days?
You know, that's been my goal. I told you I was planning to go down there and interview him if I could a couple of weeks ago, and then that's when I ended up coming down with COVID.
Yeah.
And I got sick, so I couldn't go down and talk to him. I would like to, and I'd like to not do it on the phone. I'd like to do it in person, because I think he's such a compelling character.
Agreed.
He's an interesting dude who is incredibly thoughtful about himself and his own career. And I like talking to him.
And this is a pivotal moment in his baseball trajectory.
Enormous.
I'd love to have
right?
him
how
that.
He handles this and where his mentality is at, kind of where his mindset is. So I would like to. I'm hoping to go down there later this week, Justin. We'll see if it works out and if I can, if he's available, et cetera, because I'm not going to go down there if he's not available. But
until
yeah.
then, Carlos Santana time.
Carlos Santana time. Yeah. Play some Oikoma Va or whatever and get yourself ready. All right. Coming up next, I solicited all kinds of opinions yesterday on the suspensions and the incident in Anaheim and heard back from a bunch of ex-major leaguers. Some of their opinions won't surprise you at all, but one of them will. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.